everyone, and welcome to another episode of Relay, the Team GB podcast, supported by GoDaddy, the series that gets to know the athletes who will be representing Team GB at the Tokyo Olympics. Right then, here we go. Yes, this is Relay, and alongside me, as ever, are Rhys James. Hi, Rhys.
Hello.
Hi, Nicola Adams.
Hey.
Oh, that's, you can't have a description that just says Nicola Adams.
The lioness.
Oh, you're your own big up.
Every week there's a new nickname you've given yourself, which is just, so I'm going to have to come in with some of my own here. Rhys, third place in Comedy Central's Funniest Student 2010. Let's not forget everyone else's achievements for a second.
All right, so lioness it is today, is it?
Yeah.
All right, we like that. Please welcome Nicola the Lioness Adams on the podcast, two-time Olympic gold medal winning champion. There's a couple of things I want to ask you, Nicola. Let's get straight into it because we are an Olympic podcast. We are Relay. We are the official podcast of Team GB. It's just a week to go now until Tokyo, and a lot of the athletes will be in holding camp. What is holding camp? Did you have a holding camp for the two Olympics in which you won gold medal? And what happens and what's it all about and why do you have a holding camp?
Basically, the holding camp for us anyway, for going to Rio, was actually in Rio, so we could climatise, get used to the heat. They'd bring in some of the other countries as well, some of the other boxers, and we'd get to spar against them just to see the different techniques, see how people are doing.
You sparred against the people that you would be boxing against potentially for a gold medal?
Yeah, yeah.
That's weird.
Did you try and injure anyone before any main competition, trip them up?
Do you know what it is? It's like there's a misconception of, you think, oh, well, if I spar against this person, they're going to know what I'm going to do when I get into the ring. But sparring's all about learning and trying out different things. So when we go into a spar, for example, I might be sparring against someone from a different country, and my coach will say to me, okay, this round, all I want you to do is work on counterattacks.
Right.
So no matter what she's doing, I'm just working on throwing counterpunches. So you're never really doing the tactics that you'd actually do when you're boxing against them.
Like, have you ever seen, in the dining room, have you ever seen a nation who, let's say, avoids chicken but bangs on the veggies and the meat, but, you know, like, oh, wow, porridge for dinner? Do you know what I mean?
When we went to China, it was literally, we saw the training program, because what we do when we go away, we train how they train. So we saw the training program and it was like, in the morning, 30 rounds of sparring. In the afternoon, 30 rounds of sparring. And it's like, bearing in mind, in Olympic boxing, you do three-minute rounds. Yeah. And they wanted to do 30 rounds. Wow. We were like, what the? So literally all they do is just spar constantly. Just spar.
No technique training or like weights or cardio or all that?
So they don't do strength training or running. That's what I was so surprised about, because I was like, wow, like how do you get the strength? But when you watch their technique, they're just very, very fast and very, very skillful. Mm. And it comes from doing the amount of sparring that they do and just focusing on technique.
That's why they're good at ping pong.
You're saying they don't do the strength training for ping pong?
They're just fast and
they
quick.
Just, yeah, you yeah. Just need. They don't do the running. They don't do the strength training.
But then again, neither did Forrest Gump. And he was bloody good at ping pong, weren't he? You know what I mean?
He did the running, though, famously.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he just kept going.
Run, Forrest.
All right, well, that's fascinating. That's a really nice insight into what it's like in camp, you know. And this isn't aimed at you, and it's not a personal question, right? But what if there's, let's say you're in boxing camp, and you see, let's say, for example, today's guests are sailors, right? Is there any romance between the athletes in camp?
Well,
here we go. Strap yourselves in, ladies and gentlemen. Forget Love Island, Nicola Adams, and the Olympic love chair. Should we take a deep breath?
I mean, athletes are human, so right. You know, everybody has, you know, urges. And I mean, I guess sometimes you see people you might like.
It does happen. No, not
very diplomatic answer.
Yeah. Well, of course.
You've just got to keep focused on the competition.
All right.
Or try to.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'll be honest with you. I don't know how much of this you've heard post edit, but that was a quick insight into the romance that goes on within a camp at an Olympic village. And trust me, whatever you just heard wasn't as good as what was edited out. Now, one thing we want to do with this episode is take ourselves back to our favourite Olympic moments, because as we know, the Olympics throughout history always have iconic moments, both visually and I think the word is orally. When you hear a certain noise, a certain sound, you think, oh yeah, that takes me way back. So let's welcome a man who has been there, he's done it, he's commentated on some of the biggest events in the Olympics. Let's welcome Rob Walker. Round of applause.
Hey.
And I'm sure that our technicians in the booth will add in a rapturous round of applause to make that round of applause sound even bigger, Rob. Rob, we know you from the snooker because you're the MC at the snooker, but in 2012 you did the sailing, and then in Rio you did so many other events as well for the BBC. What does it take to be a great commentator? Because there's a massive amount of responsibility on your shoulders, because you're capturing a specific important moment in time.
I think it's just discipline, and this is going to sound boring, it's preparation, 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 because you're trying to bring it to life with your voice, and from nowhere, or seemingly from nowhere, random stats just pop into your head. And hopefully the better you get and the more preparation you do, the more relevant that statistic is at the moment it comes out. But I think it's really important to remember, for all commentators, and hopefully I'm not as good yet as I will be at 56, and hopefully at 46 I'm better than I was at 36, but you've still got to remember to say what you see and care about it when you're saying it.
Catchphrase: Roy Walker made a lot of money on saying what he saw.
And I'm not related to him, by the way.
Oh, there you go. Nice. So we've seen recently on social media that Clive Tildesley is auctioning off his crib sheets from the football and big football games that he's commentated on. How big are your crib sheets? Are they a single piece of A3, A4, or do you have a file?
I go for file size. Now, wow. At the moment, wow. I'm going through what you can see is three different sets of sheets. I've got women's track, 100, all the way up to marathon. I've got the four hurdles, one hurdles, and then I've got the steeplechase, and I've got all the field events. Women on that side of the desk. Men over here on the other.
You're going to be doing the boxing as well in Tokyo, right, Rob? Nicola, something that you know quite a bit about.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Do you write crib sheets, or did you write crib sheets for your opponents so that you knew what they were going to do at specific times in the fight?
Do you know, we used to, it used to be typed out, and then we'd have a read through it, we'd watch the videos, and then basically somebody, one of the analysis team, would go through, they'd tell you how many punches they're throwing around, whether they start off really fast and then die off towards the end, or whether they're a slow burner and then pick up as the rounds go along, what their habits are, what even right down to what punch they favour the most. They might throw a lot, they might be really heavy right-handed all the time, or throw more jabs than anything else, or, you know, so it's really good information to have. So when you go into the competition, you know exactly what you're up against. You know whether, okay, they're going to be fast when they start off, so I'll be more defensive for the first couple of rounds, and then I'll just take it from there and take over.
I'm into this. Rob, I know we've got you on a Zoom, and I hope you've got a great broadband package, because I'm just going to leave you there for 1 minute, because I'm going to get into this. Have you ever stepped into the ring and gone, oh my God, this is not what we put down on paper statistically?
Yeah,
really?
sometimes it does happen like that. How I used to read it was some of the fighters that you've fought before, they'd have little upgrades. So they change little things.
Like Mario Kart.
Yeah. They change little slight things. But then you'd find after a round or two that it'd start to slip. So it wasn't really ingrained in as good as it should have been.
Right.
And then that's when they come unstuck.
Amazing. And then, Rob, I guess on the flip side of the coin is you'll have done your study and noticed that certain athletes do specific things at specific times.
Yeah.
But the same goes for what happened to Nicola, is when you see the difference, you think, oh, hang on a minute, they've changed tact here. And that's something that you can pick up on and talk about.
Yes, and you're absolutely right. And that's where the research comes in, because I think you have to feel confident enough to go on the front foot. So what I mean by that is, if something surprises you and you've done your homework, you're not afraid to say, wow, this is a bit different, isn't it? Because we haven't seen X or Y from A, B and C before. Whereas if you haven't done the homework, you might not be as confident, and you might think, oh, hang on a minute, did I miss something that they did 3 weeks ago? But if you've done the homework, you know you haven't. And it just goes back to what I said earlier, Vernon. You've got to say what you see. It's the most amazing live theatre and drama, and it's unfolding in front of your eyes, and sport is unpredictable. And you just got to follow the drama and open your mouth and hope that something vaguely sensible comes out.
Yeah. I know how that feels.
So what we're going to do now, Rob, is we're going to make you sing for your supper, I guess. We've chosen our three favourite events of Olympics gone by. And Reese, you're going to go first.
Sure. My favourite... my second favourite Olympian after Nicola.
Hey. Is,
I felt too on the nose to choose Nicola while we're sat here.
Yeah.
Kelly Holmes's double gold victory in 2004 was absolutely monumental. Not only in what she'd been through to get there, but the manner in which it happened to be at the back for most of the both races. Like you say, it's this mental chess and getting this mental fortitude as well to just come through and just go, no, just wait for your moment, bide your time. And in both races, just coming through. I think the 800 she wasn't even going to do. And then she was convinced at the last minute, oh, why don't you just get into the 800 as well, and then wins that. And then that was the one where she had her bulging eyes and she wasn't sure that she'd won as she got to the end because it was very tight, just going, oh my God, have I won it? And then it being announced. But the 1500 was the one where she was basically miles ahead and she it was just, oh, it was just amazing. And just like, I don't know, we're all watching it. I didn't really know that her tactic was going to be wait until the end. So then it was a genuine surprise for me. I don't know if a commentator would have already known. She always does this. Mm-hmm. She always waits. And then in the last, you know, 100 metres, absolutely smashes it. But it was so shocking. And the fact she did it twice, absolutely mind-blowing.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. So, Rob, what we're going to do, we're going to get you, if you would, in all your glory, if you could recreate that moment for us, Kelly Holmes, in the, are you going to do the 1500 or the 800 for us?
Let's do the 15 because it was the moment she sealed the double.
Yeah, let's do that. All right, Rob Walker, over to you. Take us back, please, to that iconic moment with Kelly Holmes in the 1500.
She's done the 8. It's an incredible journey, an incredible story. She's beginning to pull away. 50 metres to go. She's going to do it. This is absolutely fantastic. Holmes creates history in Athens. She's flying in Greece and she's going home with not one, but 2 gold medals. Her eyes are bulging. She can hardly believe it, and neither can we. She's a double Olympic champion.
Oh, there you go.
Amazing.
Yes, tingling.
I was there.
Amazing. All right, so I'm going to go next. Okay, I'm going to go next, and I apologise. But I've chosen a moment for me that was more visually iconic than I think the actual event itself. It's Daley Thompson in Los Angeles, 1984, when shorts were shorts and vests were vests.
Jürgen Hinkson is out front in this 1500 metres, but it doesn't matter. Daley Thompson, the Commonwealth champion, the European champion, the world champion, is going to do it again. He becomes only the second man in history to successfully defend the Olympic decathlon title. 10 events, but there's only ever been one man in this competition. His name is Daley Thompson. And once again, he's proudly flying the flag for Great Britain. Thompson is on top of the world.
Oh, there we go!
Oh, yes. Oh,
10 events, but only one man.
Only one.
Love that. So which one have you chosen? What iconic moment for you?
I've gone for Jessica Ennis. The 2012 Olympic Games, her winning the gold medal was unbelievable.
It's seventh heaven here in the Olympic Stadium for Jessica Ennis. What a story and what a journey. She's been absolutely perfect for 2 days. The poster girl of the Games has soaked up all the pressure. It's been bearing down on her, and now she comes away. She knows the gold is hers. She seals it with a brilliant run in the 800 metres. The drama, the emotion. She's delivered. She's done it. The pride of Sheffield, the pride of Great Britain, Jessica Ennis will always be able to call herself the Olympic champion. And she did it right here at home in London.
Yeah! Oh. Love that. I love it. Rob, good luck. Thank you very much. We'll be listening. We'll be watching. Thank you very much. Rob Walker, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Pleasure. Absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, there you go. Do you agree with us? What are your favourite Olympic moments so far? You can let us know at Team GB on social media or email us relaypodcast@tbimedia.co.uk. All right, so let's welcome our guests, shall we? We've got two very special guests, two sailors. Now, the only sailor I met ended up in a debauch night in Amsterdam. but this is going to be a completely different conversation. So let's welcome Hannah Mills, everyone, and Aileen McIntyre.
Hi, guys.
Hi, how are you? How do we find you? What? Just explain where you are and your surroundings.
We are down in Portland, where we train. It's the British sailing team base. It's where the London Olympics was. We've just been here until we head to Tokyo.
So in total, Hannah, how long have you been there? When did you arrive there? When did you kind of start to knuckle down?
About a week ago. No, we, to be honest, we've been sort of trying to battle, obviously, COVID and travel and all sorts, because a lot of our sport is around travel and training with our rivals, which is a little bit strange maybe, but that's how we get the best out of our sessions on the water. So we've been away a lot, but these last 3 weeks we've just been down in Portland, Monday to Friday, kind of like an office job in a way. Getting the hours in before we fly out to Japan next week.
Well, you say rivals. I think they consider you guys their rivals more than you actually having rivals. Because let's look at your sailing achievements, Hannah. Silver at the 2012 London Olympics, gold at the 2016 Rio Olympics, 2017 silver at the World Championships, 2019 gold at the World Championships, 2021 silver at the European Championships, and 2021 you named as one of 12 sailors going to Tokyo at Team GB. You don't have rivals. You are their rival. Yeah.
Mic drop.
Yeah, boom.
Leave it there.
Yeah. Which is pretty cool, right?
It's
very
cool.
By the way, you're an MBE.
Well... yeah,
we like to ban that around occasionally.
Or the MBA.
Ailey, you joined. You jumped on ship. You jumped on board in 2017, right? When this partnership came to fruition, is that right?
Yeah. I stole her in 2017. I begged her to sail with me in 2017.
But we want to know about sailing. How do you start sailing?
Yeah.
And because we've got a game show host, a stand-up comedian, and a two-time Olympic gold-winning boxer, we're not that kind of up on sailing. Reese, you had a question, which is an obvious question, but it's a fair question, didn't you?
Yeah, well, it's quite a stupid question that I intentionally asked before we spoke to Hannah and Ailey, because I didn't want them to know that I'd asked it. But now, clearly, I'm going to have to ask.
Now that I've thrown you under the boat.
Yeah. You've thrown me under the boat, Vernon. The question was it's a race, isn't it? It's basically, is it a series of races? Do they take times? I know it's over a finish line, but I was also wondering if there was any kind of point scoring involved. Technically, you know, that's a good bit of sailing, for example, a judge might say, and then give you 10 points. Is there any aspect of that? I spent too long with Vernon here.
You're almost there. We do a series of, we'll do 10 races at the Olympics. They're about 45 to 50 minutes long. And it's a point system. So first place gets 1 point, 20th place gets 20 points. And it's lowest scores wins the regatta.
Right, okay, got it. And I do have another technical question, actually. You know that bit where you're basically fully horizontal, right? You know when you're like on the side of the boat and you're fully horizontal, you're like pushing off the boat with your feet and you're miles away.
Yeah, with your knowledge right now.
Yeah.
Is that, Ailey, you can come on every show.
Is that another technical name? That bit when you're horizontal? Yeah. Now, my question, and we're about to get extremely technical here, because my question is actually excellent. How much does that feel like flying? There we go. That's the question.
I wish it felt like flying more. You're, to be honest, no, because you just get soaked the entire time.
Who does what in the boat? So would you be you'd be the horizontal one?
I'm the one flying.
Yeah.
And hands well grounded at the back, keeping me flying.
You can't really see here, but Ailey is an incredible amount taller than me. So her hanging out the side of the boat, flying, means that she's giving us a lot more leverage and keeping the boat flat against the wind.
Now that we're into the technicalities of sailing, what makes a boat go fast? As viewers, when we watch you guys sailing later on, in just a few weeks' time, actually, give us something that we can eyeball and something that we can pick out and say, oh, yeah, I remember that on the podcast. They're doing X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
What are the basics of knowing a boat and knowing the sailors?
In really simple terms, I guess, a boat going fast will be flat. The sails won't be flapping. That's the main things, really.
That's the main
thing. Yeah.
Keep it simple, that's it.
So if all the boats are the same and all the people competing are physically the same, what makes you guys, because you obviously are, faster than everyone else?
there's loads of intricacies like any sport.
Well, let's get into it. We want to know. Is it the fact that you guys can find the wind quicker than everyone else? Is it the fact that you look at the ripples on the water and you've got a great eye for where the wind is coming up? Is it all about that?
Yeah, it's all about that. It's all about finding the wind faster than everybody else. It's all about starting on the start line better than everybody else. You know, you're always trying to jostle for position, give other people, like your rivals, the worst sort of position on the start line. It's really tactical, isn't it?
Yeah, really tactical. And for us, starting so hard because it's an invisible line.
We are judging that.
We don't have anything on board to tell us where it is. That's all our judgment. So that's a real skill to hone in, and it obviously gives you a big advantage if you get off the line well.
Does like weight and height play an advantage as well, or if you're taller hanging out doing the horizontal thing?
Yeah, when it gets windy, we're in pretty good position, our partnership. I'm probably one of the tallest crews, so yeah, that definitely helps us out.
How do you build your chemistry? How do you get to know each other? Is it just a lot of time on the water?
Well, a lot of time on the water, but obviously, a bit of bonding outside of that.
Yeah. Oh, all right. Well, let's stop there. Bonding, we like that.
Yeah.
Now, we've bonded, us three, on the podcast. You know, it was Jaeger bombs, then a couple of lagers, and then a curry. We had a great night. Now, because you're athletes, obviously you don't drink and you don't eat fatty food. So,
when
you're bonding together, what does it involve? All of the above.
Yeah. Similar to what you just described.
No, just, you know, the small things in life, the little things in life, I think, sitting having a cup of tea with your biscuits at the end of the day and chatting.
Oh, that's nice because, you know.
Very wholesome, that.
Yeah, because there's going to be a period of time where you guys are literally going to be on pedestals, and you've experienced this, Nicola, and it's so nice to hear that you do actually just like a brew and a digestive, or the biscuits are available, which prompts my next question. What's your favourite biscuit?
Chocolate hobnob.
Custard creams for me.
Is it?
Yeah.
Good dipping.
We're going to go back to technicalities because I like the technicalities of sport. But the conditions in Tokyo are going to be quite strange, right? Because there's different weather systems in Tokyo.
Yeah,
it's on the Pacific.
Yeah, the conditions in Tokyo are pretty epic. We get massive waves, big winds generally, but equally it can rain and be miserable. So
let's hope for the big winds and waves, because that'd be more fun.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
Do you need like the exact right amount of wind then? What happens if it comes to the day of the race in the Olympics and there's no wind?
So we can sail in like really light winds. You don't have to have much to be able to sail and race. There's a top end as well where we just all blow over and it's a bit of a disaster. So, yeah, there's kind of a bandwidth, but it's pretty big.
So what's like a typical training day for a sailor?
What's a typical training day? So this week we have, in the morning, we've been doing heat acclimation.
What's that?
So we've been getting in a tent, a little greenhouse tent with a heater and cycling for an hour in 35 degrees.
Did you never do that? Have you never done that?
No. So what does that do? Is that just endurance or what's...
It's specifically for Tokyo. So because we've been there quite a lot, it's really hot and humid out there. And because we're on the water for so long, you know, our races are 45 minutes, but we launch an hour before that. And then we do two races a day. So we can be on the water for 4 hours in the heat. And so we're all just trying to get our body's used to it, and you can make quite big, significant changes to your physiology.
Wow.
So we do that in the morning, which is hell. Like, it's hell in that tent. So we feel pretty rough for about 2 hours after that. And then we've been going sailing for a couple of hours. And then in the afternoon, we've either been packing up our kit to go or doing a weight session.
Oh, what's nice. Like a typical menu or eating regime for a sailor? Do you have to stick to specific things, or can you just basically eat what you want?
Ask this.
Chocolate hobnobs.
Yeah, I've been on weight gain for the last year.
Welcome to my world. Yeah.
My diet, I like to call it the 3 cake a day diet, which is exactly what you want to hear.
Oh, the weight gain diet. That's been me since I started puberty. Right. Oh, terrible. Let's talk about the technological advances in sailing, because, you know, the boats that we saw back in the day aren't the boats that you're racing in Tokyo. How does that improve the performance of you guys as well as the performance of your times? Because I would imagine as technology gets better, you're going to have to adjust and get better with what's available, right?
Oh God, we have an amazing team around us to help with this. Both Hannah and I are pretty, I would say we're on the water girls. We like to go out, race, make the boat go fast using our own technique. And so we really rely on some of the amazing people we've got around us to support us in, you know, there's so much to know. We can't know it all. So, and they're much more technically minded than us.
That's what we like to say.
That's what we like to think anyway. So they really help us out. But no, it's huge. And we're really lucky with that to have people so brilliant helping us out, basically.
And you're in the 470 class right now. Not for me, but for like the uninitiated listener. What does that mean? I know. I already know. So I'm just going to switch off while you're after this. But sure. For anyone else.
Because he's a team player, you see. That's what it is.
Well, the 470, very simply, is 4 metres 70 long. So that's an easy one to remember.
Ah. Yeah.
Two people, obviously, one on the trapeze, which is the lying down flying thing, and me at the back steering. So... yeah, that's kind of it, actually.
But it's going to be mixed in the next Olympics, right?
It is. So,
yeah. Yeah, we can't sail together anymore.
Broken
and we'll have to sail with boys.
Hang on a minute. Sorry to interrupt. Why can't you have two girls versus a girl and a guy, or two girls versus two boys? Surely that's mixed.
Yeah.
It's a compulsory mixture on purpose because... sailing is actually pretty physical, and some of the rules we have now in the 470 make it really physical. So when it... this is really technical here.
Yeah, that's what we want.
Yeah, we want to know.
The official Team GB podcast.
A flag goes up about at 8 knots, to be specific, and at 8 knots, we're allowed to pump as much as we like. So we can...
And that's where you waddle the sail to get it going.
Yeah. We like waft the sails. We do whatever we can, rock the boat to get us going faster. And it's pretty exhausting. And so to have two boys against two girls... unfortunately, the boys just have more physicality than we will be able to.
And because it's your last, it's your last Olympics that you can sail together. Is that inspiring you more to go out on a bang together, or is it more pressure?
That's a good point. We could be like the reigning forever female 470 champions, can't we?
I know, yeah.
Hadn't even thought about that.
Oh, I'm sorry. What have I done?
More pressure.
Brilliant. More pressure.
You'll do it. You'll be fine.
Yeah. Ailey, sailing's in your family, right? Your dad's already picked up a medal at the Seoul Olympics.
He has, yeah. His gold medal's lived outside my bedroom door my entire life, yeah.
Oh, I love that. You see, because one thing we like on the podcast is we like asking athletes, where's your medals? And Nicola has told us that her medals are in a frame with the gloves and the kit that she wore.
We've spoken
to some athletes and theirs are just in the loft in a box, which really makes us angry because, you know, we get behind you and then what do you do with the medal? Stick it in the loft.
Yeah.
Hannah, where's your gold? Don't say it's in a shoebox in the loft, or else we're gonna stop the interview straight away.
Just make it up.
In a sock in a drawer.
No, it's not. It was in the loft. We're in a two-bed bungalow that we're living in, and it was in the loft, hidden, because it's not the safest of bungalows, I'd say, security-wise. So we were panicked about that. But now it's in a friend's house. We need to do something a bit more like Nicola, I think. That sounds really nice.
Well, this is another stupid question coming your way, but seeing as we're on the subject, did you get to keep the boat?
Oh.
We actually own our boat.
Yes! Yeah! So I love that!
Nice.
We were talking about your rivals, and you mentioned that you train with your rivals, and Nicola has mentioned that she sparred with her rivals when you were in camp. So who are your rivals, and does the pre-Olympics camp enable you to take a look at their technique and get any ideas of what they're, well, and how they're going to attack the competition?
Yeah, for sure. So we have four big rivals, I'd say. There's the Spanish girls, the French girls, the Japanese girls and these Italian girls are all probably there ready to battle it out with us for a medal.
Do the different countries have different styles? Nicola was talking about how, you know, some of these different cultures have different, very specific styles they stick to. Do you get that with sailing? Do you get like, you know, the French sail very romantically? The Germans are efficient. Do you get any of this stuff?
Yeah, you've basically summed it up, actually.
Yeah, international stereotypes.
How would you describe us? What about the Brits then?
quite reserved, polite, letting people past. I know that's not true, though. I've seen your record.
If you heard the language that came out of our boat, you definitely wouldn't be saying that, that's for sure.
Does that mean that there's inter-boat banter?
Yeah, you could say that, yeah. There's a good amount of verbal communications between boats on the water.
Oh, I love that. Let's get into this. This is something, yeah. Because Nicola, you must have a bit of smack talk. Yeah, so where does it start? Ailey, where does the banter and the smack talk start? Is it as you're getting changed in the dressing rooms? Do you share the dressing rooms? Or do you get changed in the Team GB camp and then go down to the water? Or do you all get there, get out of your kit, change together, start slating each other, and then get in the boat, and the slating continues? Talk us through this process.
Oh, we're actually pretty liberal in the sailing world. We just rock up by our boats and strip off and get changed, to be honest. But it all really kicks off there. There's definitely you walk into the boat park, try to have a bit of swagger, I guess, make it look like you're ready for the fight. And that's the moment where you start to see each other and
game face on.
Yeah, game face on.
Oh, I love that.
And can you hear when you're actually sailing? Can you get close enough that you can shout taunts? Can you go past the French boat just going, "Amelie was rubbish"?
Yeah, I mean, we could do that. You're absolutely right.
Au revoir. Love that. All right. Well, this is something else, you see. So now, see, that's what I love about this podcast is we've gone from the technicalities of sailing, now that we know what to look out for with the tautness of the sails and the waddling to get going.
Just leaning out of that boat. It's completely horizontal, flying, as I said before, shouting, "Chorizo's not even that nice."
I mean, hopefully the cameras get close enough and you'll be able to hear us all screaming at each other.
In fact, why don't you do us a favour, right? Why don't you promise us now that when you sail past and you're going to do this kind of taunting, you go past, say, the Italian boat and you shout, "Vernon Kay thinks you're a mug."
Pineapple deserves to be on pizza! You're listening to Relay, supported by GoDaddy, the official domain name, website builder and web hosting partner of Team GB that empowers everyday entrepreneurs. Now, Hannah, talk to us about the Big Plastic Pledge, because sustainability is really important to you. So what is it?
So GoDaddy are actually supporting the Big Plastic Pledge, which is awesome, helping with the website. And it's basically just to encourage all athletes and spectators and fans and everyone involved in sport to try and reduce their single-use plastic. It's obviously something we as sailors see a lot firsthand out in the oceans. It can slow us down when we're racing if it gets caught on our boat. And yeah, I think it's just about the sporting world coming together for a good cause to try and get rid of single-use plastic in sport.
The majority of plastic that you see bobbing up and down on the water, is that plastic litter that people have discarded on the beach or by the shore or tossed it into the sea? Or is it stuff that comes from boats and makes its way to the shore? How does it work?
It's a bit of both, really. Like when we're launching our boats, it's mostly stuff, I think, that's blown into the sea from bins and from rivers and all sorts. But then when we're out sailing, it's more sort of fishing lines and things like that that have come free or been dumped by fishing boats.
So you've witnessed just fishing nets just floating and bobbing along on the ocean, just tossed to one side?
Yeah, tons. You'd be surprised what we've seen.
Oh, man.
Has any of that ever hindered you in a race?
Not recently, but yeah, it has before in quite a big competition, got a massive bit of plastic stuck under our boat, and it took us about a minute to detach ourselves from it. So that was, that stuck with me.
So let's change gear. Let's everyone try consciously to clean up the oceans, because we do know that plastic is an issue for both human life and wildlife as well. And I think it's great that you're highlighting that. But anyway, on to a positive. It's time for the Motivation Station. And what we've done, we've composed a sonnet. We've put a poem together. Rhys and Nicola are going to read it out. And hopefully this will put a bound in your stride and prepare you with all the joys that we hopefully will give you by reading you this poem. And you can take it to Tokyo and really, really hope it will lift your spirits.
The GoDaddy Motivation Station.
Hannah and Ailey, Olympians, your time has now come to compete in the land of the famed rising sun. No matter the venue, north, south or equator, in sailing no nation has ever been greater. And top of the league through and through is Team GB's women's 470 crew.
Hannah, a champion from 2016, you're back to continue your reign as the queen. When all's said and done and you've conquered the rest, no doubt will remain who's the best of the best.
Ailey, you won't give an inch, you won't give a quarter. You're destined to conquer the Japanese water.
When it gets to the sharp end, the gold medal race, McIntyre Mills won't be beaten for pace. As fast as a speedboat, as cunning as Drake, your rivals are doomed. All will trail in your wake.
It might be a breeze or the closest of shaves, but Britannia will rule the Olympian waves. The moment's arrived to win sport's holy grail, and the women's 470 crew's setting sail.
Hannah, Ailey, thank you so much for joining us. You've given us a real insight. I mean, you know, sailing is one of those sports that you love to watch because you can tell it's adrenaline filled. But when you don't know the technicalities, you just see two people in a bathtub going up and down the water. But now what we are going to see is we're going to see you two having a right go at each other, having a right go at your opponents as you cruise forward and take gold medal for Team GB. Enjoy it. Do your best. And I know that's a cliche, but it's one of those things that as a parent, we always say, do your best. And if you do your best, you'll come home victorious. So thank you very much, girls.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having us, guys.
Well, that's it for today. But I hope as a listener, we've given you an insight into the preparation that all our athletes have done and all the hard work that they've put into hopefully bringing home gold.
Oh, it's going to happen, isn't it? They all sound confident. They're all just like, look, it'll be fine. Most of them have, half of them have already won gold anyway. But some of them, it's their first Olympics. And they're all just telling us that's going to be right. And we're finding out they're psyching out the other nations, it turns out.
Yeah. I loved that bit. That was awesome.
Well, if you're enjoying the series, you know what to do. Give us a follow. We are Relay. Give us a follow wherever you get your podcasts. And finally, if you want to get in touch, if you want to have your say, if you want to throw some phrases that the sailing girls may throw the way of their opponents, the Japanese, the Spanish, the Italians, and I think there was one more nation, the French, there you go, the French, then all you got to do is email us relaypodcast@tbimedia.co.uk, and you can at us at Team GB on social media or teamgb.com. And remember, if you're going to put your slating on a public platform, keep it clean and keep it sensible. Thank you very much. Coming up next time on Relay, it's the last episode before the start of Tokyo Olympics. We meet GB hockey hopeful Sam Ward. Sam's got an amazing story, so make sure you do give us a follow because you won't want to miss this episode. His story is something else. It really is. Relay is the Team GB podcast supported by GoDaddy and produced by TBI Media. That's it from me.
Reese, Laughing Horse, New Act of the Year, quarterfinalist 2009.
That's it from her.
Nicola, the lioness.
And that's from me, Vernon Kay, replaced by a chef, but the Family Fortunes Interactive DVD is still available.